Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday, May 12th, heading into Mother's Day. So a happy early Mother's Day to the moms out there from up here where it's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota. Coming up this hour, we're going to ask if abnormal is the new normal when we talk to author, former editor, and media critic Mark Jacob, talking more about the CNN debacle from the other night and whether national newsrooms have still learned anything after all these years of covering somebody who does not only fail to follow the norms of democracy, but actively works to tear them down. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher about the weekend coming up in sports. In a second, we're also going to note that it's Travel and Tourism Week across the country, including here in Wisconsin. Governor Tony Evers takes note of the occasion, and it does have me wondering, as I've asked on the show a few other times, if there is a place that you would recommend if someone told you they want a new destination for a weekend road trip somewhere in the state. And I would offer up a couple of things here, and then I'm going to put Luke Mathers on the spot, who's filling in for Aaron Zommers today. I'd say that if you're more familiar with the Milwaukee area, then I'd say you want to come up to the Chippewa Valley and go to something like Country Jam or Country Fest or Rock Fest. Whereas if you've never been down to the Milwaukee area, if you're from other parts of Wisconsin and you haven't hit Summerfest yet, you have got to do that at some point. Personally, for me, if I were doing a weekend away, I've had a couple of weekends away at very quiet cabins on very quiet lakes up north, and it's glorious to get away from all the noise, get away from all the rat race. Mr. Mathers, if I said Wisconsin road trip, recommendation to somebody, what would you tell them?
Recommendation. I'm a big fan of the Elroy Sparta Trail. And
oh, yes.
It's been something that growing up, the family would do. My dad was an avid biker throughout when he was my age. He was an avid biker. He biked, he parked a Honda Civic in Seattle and biked all the way down to San Diego and then hitchhiked back to his car in Seattle.
Wow.
He biked all over the UK. He was an avid biker. So biking was a big part of the family growing up. And we used to do the Elroy Sparta Trail with frequency. If you haven't done it, I highly recommend it. I've heard that there's been some improvements done of recent, and I haven't done it in a couple of years, and I'm itching to get back and do that as a road trip and then an eventful weekend.
Well, you probably don't know that a couple of days ago, Kristen Lyerly was here saying the exact same thing.
What?
Waxing poetic about the Elroy Sparta Trail. So I guess I have to send the two of you on a long bike ride and see how you feel when it's all said and done. Studio line is 844-967-2789. What's your recommendation for a Wisconsin road trip if you had to get away for the weekend? What would you tell people? Tell people where to go, as it were. We'd love to hear your ideas on that. Along with it, you'll recall that we had Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers on the show Wednesday, marking National Travel and Tourism Week. The travel industry is on the front burner for Governor Evers. He made it the focus of his weekend radio address, and here's about a one-minute excerpt of that.
It's no secret. Tourism is a critical industry for our state, which is why we've invested more than $200 million of our federal pandemic relief funds in our travel and tourism, hotels and lodging, and entertainment industries. And our strategic investments have paid off. Wisconsin outpaced the national average every month last year in travel spending compared to pre-pandemic levels. In fact, this past fall was the best season for travel spending recovery in the last 3 years. And while I'm all for being neighborly, we crushed our competitors in Illinois, Michigan, and Minnesota. When comparing changes in travel spending from 2022 to spending from 2019, Wisconsin beat those three states every single month in 2022. And that means more jobs and economic activity for all the hardworking folks here in our state. And from fishing and boating to camping and hiking, outdoor recreation also brought in more than $8.7 billion. These numbers are proof of the strength and success of this industry and the hardworking folks who run it. And it's why investing in its success continues to be critically important to ensuring our economic momentum continues.
So there was Governor Evers talking about Travel and Tourism Week. And again, we had Secretary Sayers on as well, talking about how they go through all the data. There's all sorts of data for everything these days to figure out who should they target Wisconsin tourism advertising toward. And the thing is, you know, it works. We're competing with all the other states. Luke, did you hear how he pronounced Minnesota? He kind of gave it a Jesse Ventura kind of a vibe to it.
Yeah, it's fun. Play around with it.
I know. For those folks that are watching on Facebook, we brought out the Hi Mom coffee mug, and you've noticed that Luke is properly titled as Margaret's son and me as Joan's son. And so we just wanted to, again, wish a happy Mother's Day for all the moms that are out there. And we're looking forward then after that to basically an entire month of getting ready for Father's Day. You know, so we'll spend today on the moms. Then we're going to spend all the rest of the time figuring out, you know, what are my girls going to get me this year?
No, see, we flip it in the household. It is Mom's Day is the week or the month, and then Dad's Day, maybe we'll have fun at a baseball game or something like that, but that's about it.
Oh, yeah. That is actually totally us, too. And the one thing that I hear every year is that, Dad, you should just go rest in the hammock for the day, which is really a way of saying stop bugging us. And yesterday, the hammock went up in the backyard alongside Lake Wasota here. So that is my current mood as I posted on social media yesterday, is to get that hammock up and enjoy a weekend. Well, we may be dodging a little rain in it. We'll find out from Weatherology how the weekend forecast is shaping up. And then we'll have more coming up, including Mark Jacob at 7:30 and Dan Schumacher coming up at 7:50 on this Friday at Up North News Radio. Forecast here. Quick note on sports. The Brewers were off yesterday. They opened a three-game series against the Kansas City Royals at home starting tonight. Corbin Burns on the mound. And the Green Bay Packers 2023 schedule has been released. They open up in Chicago on September 10th. It's a 3:25 afternoon game that, of course, will be on Fox. It's not till week three that they play at home, a noon game against New Orleans. But even with, old what's-his-face gone in the New York Jets, the Packers are still going to get five primetime games this season, six if you count Thanksgiving Day. There's two on Sunday night, two on Monday night. There's a Thursday night game. So all in all, a nice schedule that's shaping up, including, like I said, on Thanksgiving. And I believe as well, Christmas Eve at noon and New Year's Eve night, 7:20 at Minnesota. As Governor Evers said in that last bite there. Love the way he said that. Jennifer Pachitsky is here, meteorologist with Weatherology, to tell us what the weather is shaping up to look like all around Wisconsin for this weekend. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, it does look like chances for showers and thunderstorms across the board here for today. Still above average for most as well, with that lingering warm front from earlier this week. In the 70s primarily, a little cooler in the 60s around Oshkosh and down to Milwaukee. For Saturday, taking a look at the weekend, we'll have a chance for some showers and thunderstorms continue tomorrow. As a cold front begins to push through, looks like a chance for storms during the morning in the southern parts of the state, during the day around Amory and Baldwin, and not until the evening hours for central Wisconsin. Only slightly cooler temperatures with the passing of that cold front tomorrow. Still above average for nearly everyone, though. But then for your Mother's Day coming up on Sunday, a little bit on the cooler side as that system pushes through, dropping into the 50s from Madison to Milwaukee up to Oshkosh, which is below those seasonal averages of the mid to upper 60s for this time of the year. But it looks like mid to low 60s for everyone else on Sunday. Pretty decent chance for some showers in the south up to Wisconsin Rapids as well for Sunday, mainly for the first half of the day, and then it should end the day should end off here on a dry note. Then just a slight chance for rain for the first half of the day from Wausau over to the west towards Amory. But then it does look like already a new warm front comes in by Monday, getting us back up above average with a dry start to the work week and sunny skies to look forward to as well.
There we go. Be nice and spring-like for us there. Jennifer, thank you so much. Hope you have a great weekend.
You too.
That's our weatherology update from meteorologist Jennifer Fachitsky. Also, a reminder that if you'd like to give us a buzz at 844-967-2789, we still want to know what you would suggest for people for a Wisconsin road trip. If you were going to suggest a place that somebody hasn't been for the first time, what would you tell them? Now, we're celebrating the fact that Wisconsin tourism is still topping all of our neighboring states, that this is an industry that supports 169,000 jobs and puts about $21 billion into the state economy, including $9 billion from all the outdoor recreation that goes on out there. So what are your recommendations for where somebody should go? Now, one of those recommendations might actually be a dive bar. And as I look at the Up North News daily newsletter that Christina Laurie puts out, which you can sign up for at upnorthnewswi.com, just click newsletter in the top banner there. That newsletter this morning that came out includes a few articles that we've run already that folks might have missed. So there are links to them. And Luke, the first one here, 6 dive bars to add to your summer bucket list. Who doesn't love a good dive bar, right?
You've got me. You've sold me. I don't even need any other information. Just let me know the location so I can put them in my Google Maps and I'm there.
Well, let's see. You're in Madison. Here's one here. Located near Lake Mendota, the website Trip Savvy named Caribou Tavern best bar in Wisconsin, serving up burgers, hot dogs, cheese curds, affordable beer, and friendly service. You're nodding.
The caribou, the boo.
The boo.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Plenty of friends have gone, and I haven't had the caribou burger, which is what is highly recommended. I've yet to have it, but if it's now on this site as well, I might have to make a change and do that this summer.
There's some affirmation. Why am I not surprised? We changed the subject to dive bars, and Mathers is right in there. Like, yep, been there, been to that one. Let's see. She mentions as well the Little Brown Jug up in Minocqua, where there are plenty of dollar bills stapled to the ceiling and wall. I've seen a few bars like that. In Spooner, of course, there's the Wobblin' Duck, which I've been to, as well as the Moccasin Bar in Hayward. And, there's even a bar listed in Milwaukee called the Newport. That says from karaoke nights to live music. It's a classic family-owned hidden gem in the Bayview neighborhood, known for its great bartenders and laid-back atmosphere. So for that and more, you can go to the Up North News website or go to the newsletter and get a recommendation there. So when it mentioned Trip Savvy, Luke, I went over and looked at that site, and their article is the best dive bar in every state. So, I mean, talk about a road trip. Have your dad get on his bicycle and do this for a trip instead. I just want to point out a couple here. In Alaska, the one called Van's Dive Bar. I mean, come on, it's got dive bar in the name, you know? And of course, the sign up on top says adult daycare, which makes sense.
It sums it up pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Yep. There's, here's another one. Again, I think if you put dive in the name, you're almost trying too hard. In Arkansas, a bar called the Bentonville Dive. It's almost like they're setting
the list. That's what
they're
it
trying
is.
To get on the list. Yeah. Sure enough, look, I'm going. This is alphabetical by state. Connecticut dive bar and restaurant is what it's called. It's.
I'm skeptical. This feels like more of a search engine optimization thing than anything else.
Exactly. For Hawaii, Kahali Maui's local dive bar. Okay. Again, I think I see a pattern. Now, they're not all like this. For Indiana, it's a place called the Dugout Bar in Indianapolis. In Iowa, it's Carl's Place in Des Moines. And literally, it looks like a guy named Carl just lives there, that he just welcomes people in, which makes sense if it's Iowa. In Kansas, it's a place called Kirby's Beer Store. Again, I fully expect Kirby is, you know, sitting there whittling on something on a chair outside. But here in Kentucky, you know what the bar is called? The Blue Dive. Grass?
The Dive? Yeah. Just the Dive?
The Dive. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Just the Dive. So now at this point, I have to go through. Mississippi has the Mermaid Dive Bar. Trip Savvy didn't do themselves any favors by making this so obvious.
Feels like most good dive bars sometimes don't even have signage. So I feel like this list is probably, like, it's maybe the best dive bar that's searchable in each state, but I truly believe, like, some dive bars, like, you're like, wait, this is this is the local watering hole. Okay, sounds good. And there is no sign. There's no X dive bar in the name. Like, it's
yes. Here's for Pennsylvania. It's a Philly joint called Dirty Frank's, which I hope is not what's on the menu, actually. But it does say here that the late Anthony Bourdain once visited while he was filming in Philadelphia. Cash only. I think that's a requirement of a dive bar, is you got to be a cash only joint.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you think? Or at least you had to be. Now, with the prevalence of gambling machines and things like that, now you almost have to have an ATM in order to encourage, you know. But again, they're not going to take your plastic there. Right. Necessarily. And going through the rest of the list again, I don't see any more dives. I see the Blue Parrot in West Virginia, and then, of course, like I said, Caribou, or as you called it, the Boo.
Yeah,
in Madison,
the Boo.
Look, not to knock on where you are, I love Madison, great place to be, but I almost feel like for a best Wisconsin dive bar, you should almost pick another one that's kind of like, you know, north of 29. You know, the actual definition of up north.
Yeah.
And which I always say just to stir the pot, because then the people who think it's Highway 8 get all bent out of shape. But, you know.
And what was the, this was Travelocity, or what was the website?
Trip Savvy is the name of it.
Yeah. I have a feeling Trip Savvy probably didn't. I would just revel in the task of having to go to every dive bar in every state and really rank them and find out who is the best. But it doesn't feel like this did all of its homework.
And I don't feel like they do that. I don't. I feel like you said, this is just totally what is the most clickable place, because you go to their homepage and, of course, you've got the most iconic department stores in New York City. You've got 18 of the best spas in Las Vegas, the best beach in every U.S. state, 10 charming small towns in Arizona. I mean, these are all fun things, but I don't know how many people are actually showing up at their front door and going, "Hello there, I'm Michael from Trip Savvy. I would like to know how divey your bar is."
Yeah, it feels very BuzzFeed-esque version of a dive bar list. I would take the ProPublica school, and I want to go and I want to do the deep research, and I want to go and investigate all the different dive bars across Wisconsin, and then come up with the true bear, the Boo, the Caribou, may very well be in the top of that list, but. I'm now uneasy. I want to do the research. I'm going to go to all these dive bars, Pat, and I'll figure it out for you.
844-967-2789 is the number if you want to give us a recommendation as to, you know, where would you send somebody in terms of dive bars? I know that there's one caller coming in there, and we'll find out if they've got some recommendations for us. And I was just thinking if you nominate somebody, though, if they get famous, they might get mad at you because part of their charm is that, you know, they're not overloaded with places. We were out to a place, of course, now I'm going to name it and get in trouble, but it was Wasota Lodge, which used to be Rider Steakhouse on Little Lake Wasota. And, you know, our favorite bartender is there. And one of the things that we still like that people don't appreciate nearly enough in Wisconsin is you might buy a round for folks and lay down a 20. And you still might get change back from that, as opposed to a lot of states where $20 will buy you a drink, you know, or a drink and a half at best. Mark from Prairie du Sac, good morning. Nice to have you here.
Good morning. Morning, guys. And you talk about True North. I mean, as somebody who grew up just south of Superior, I mean, I would think True North is somewhere in the vicinity of Highway 13 or Highway 2.
I knew you were going to say two. Highway 2 is up north. I mean, you're leaving yourself a tiny sliver that qualifies as up north. You know that, Mark.
Yeah, and I know that. But you know that I have a fondness. There was the Choo Choo Bar that was coming in right off of Highway 2 when you get into Superior. There, we used to go when I worked at the gas station up there, the Holiday gas station. Back in the early, late 70s, that we used to go there after work or putting up the truck from when the deliveries got made. But I have fond memories of that place. Mm-hmm. That they had a grill there, and they had good sandwich, filling hamburgers and porks, you know, pork burgers that I have fond memories of.
Oh yeah, I mean, and the thing I like, the thing there. the thing I like about a lot of those places, and I don't want to get in trouble with any health departments or anything, you're almost convinced they haven't cleaned the grill in 100 years, and that's part of the charm of it. But there are many things to love about your favorite place up north. Mark, thanks so much. Hey, have a very good weekend. Thanks for calling in. When we come back, Mark Jacob will be here. We were going to spend this segment as kind of a setup going, you know, do we really have to live this new abnormal, you know, everything's got to be a fight thing? And I, for one, am glad that we just kind of pushed it off a few minutes here. We'll talk to Mark Jacob about it real soon. And instead, go read that Up North News newsletter, find yourself a nice dive bar, or find a new one and send us the idea. Back with Mark after this. You're up.
NewsWI.com.
Again, this is for Kix Brooks of Brooks and Dunn, turning 68 years old today.
I'm a hard-working man. I wear a steel hard hat.
All right, Mark Jacob joins us now, author, former Chicago Tribune Metro editor. Good morning, Mark. Nice to
see
you.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
Thanks for being here. Well, I'm okay, but like others, I'm a little concerned about the state of the American media and democracy. And I just think that this week, this Trump event on CNN will be a milestone of sorts in telling us the national media has learned nothing since 2015, and that it really did, I don't want to say live up to expectations, it lived down to expectations. I would imagine, what can we say that hasn't been said already about the how unsurprising we are at how badly this turned out?
Well, I mean, it is really true that you could have just plopped this on to 2016 and it would have been the same thing. So nothing has been learned in 7 years. I mean, which is incredibly disappointing, considering it's been a pretty rocky 7 years with a lot of bad stuff happening, including an attempt to overthrow the government. So, you know, you would think that the news media would be capable of some sort of learning, but no. Pat, you know, I wrote a column for Courier Newsroom in which I suggested that the way they should have done it is by doing what I called a truth buster, which is, as soon as Trump said something that was a lie or that they thought was wrong, you'd get a panel of experts and you'd have them off to the side. You wouldn't count on Caitlin Collins, one person, to, you know, to try to, you know, stop this giant flood of lies. You would have a panel of experts who had all the information, and they would, and when they heard him say something that they thought was wrong, they'd hit the buzzer, a bit truth buzzer. Collins would stop the conversation, go to the panel. The panel would explain what the facts were and why it was wrong, if it was wrong, and then they'd move on to the next Trump comment. Now, of course, CNN would never do that because you'd have more fact-checking than you'd have Trump lies, because, you know, you would be punctuating the Trump lies. And the thing that this would stop is the way that Trump and people like Kellyanne Conway always really manage to get their lies in without confrontation is that they do a string of lies. They're, you know, it is a giant gusher of lies. And so lie, 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 lie. Kellyanne Conway, I don't know if she breathes between sentences. I mean, she's great at just talk, 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 and like I am doing right now, frankly. And nobody can interrupt her. And so that way, the host, however well-meaning, can never get back to the first lie or the second lie.
Right. And that's why I think while that idea has validity, although I think Trump would then just get up and storm out, I would still come back to my idea. And I actually wish this had been the original idea. I'd love for CNN to surprise me and say, this is actually what we meant to do all along, is take that 70 minutes as the base, mm-hmm. and now make an annotated version of it where he says something, you stop the tape, and either Caitlin Collins or somebody else comes on and says, okay, that's not true. Then they roll the tape in, they stop it again. And so this thing probably is going to be at least 90 minutes, probably a 2-hour thing. And then you run that 2-hour thing over and over and over again so that people can see all the many ways that Trump was not being truthful with the audience. And then it might be some kind of a public service, but I don't think CNN's going to do that. And in fact, the CNN staff, you know, of course, is trying in many cases. They're unhappy behind the scenes, but they are trying to, you know, put on a brave face here. Anderson Cooper last night saying, quote, "You have every right to be outraged today and angry and never watch this network again. But do you think staying in your silo and only listening to people you agree with is going to make that person go away?" Mark, that's not the point.
No, it's not, and it sets up this kind of false choice where we either like hide in our silos and not listen to anyone, or we have to watch Trump lie for 70 minutes. I mean, those are not the two choices, and having Trump lie on TV for 70 minutes, and I mean, you know, Pat, lie. This is not an opinion of me. If you did annotate it, it would be a very long annotation explaining all the lies he meant about, you know, Democrats want to kill babies after they're born and crap like that. The military has no ammunition. Are you kidding me? I mean, he lies about everything. And so the choices are not like sitting there listening to him lie for 70 minutes or sitting in your silo and not listening to anyone. That's ridiculous. That 70 minutes did not push forward the national conversation about our nation's future. It did not. That's just his way of like pushing back and trying to defend his bosses, and maybe he'll be the last one fired.
So when I ask about whether this abnormal is the new normal, I wonder if CNN has just done to itself, you know, what Elon Musk did to Twitter. And look, you know, CNN was getting plenty criticized already on many fronts. It's just that this one is especially bad. Right. But between that and you know, Twitter being a shell of its former self, you really have, you know, BuzzFeed, you know, news going out of business. You have a media landscape that is, you know, in constant motion and not in a positive way at this point in time, I think.
Right. I mean, this is really true, and if the right gets control of all the, you know, all the tools of the media, you know, it's over. That this is why this whole, you know, the liberal media is like is a ridiculous thing. There are just a few voices out there that are liberal. I mean, when you look at, you know, CNN used to be considered a moderate. You know, you'd have the spectrum with Fox and CNN and MSNBC, but you know, CNN's gone. CNN is like, you know, Fox Jr. now. And so, and Twitter, you know, all the Nazis are back on there and all the people who lie. And then you have Elon Musk, you know, commenting, you know, reinforcing the lies and, you know, suggesting that all these false flag things and all these goofy conspiracy theories. So, yeah, I mean, it's very dangerous, you know, that you know, If you can control people's minds, you don't even need guns to take over a democracy.
Can you explain to folks who this Chris Licht person is who is now running CNN and why people were alarmed the moment his name first popped up?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, I don't know a ton about Licht. I mean, I know that John Malone, the guy who's owner, who's to me is even more important than Licht. Mm-hmm. Is you know, he's a right wing guy, and he's you know, primary, you know, owner of, you know, he's the guy who's running it. He's the guy who's deciding what happens and who gets fired and whether Chris Licht keeps his job. But you know, I'll confess that, you know, I don't have Licht's biography. So.
I recall that people said, "Oh no, not this guy," and I thought, "Well, you know, I don't know. Let's give him a chance." And sure enough, as people were saying, he's trying to turn it into Fox Light, you know, essentially. You posted a few other comments from folks that rightly need to be noted. Mehdi Hassan saying, "Can you imagine a Bernie Sanders town hall and the audience is filled with socialists?" You know, and that comes back to one of my things about presidential debates is I don't want an audience in there. I don't want hooting and hollering. I don't want cheering. I don't want laughter. I want to learn about the candidates or the person being interviewed. And this decision to say, well, it's a Republican town hall with Republican New Hampshire vote. Well, then it is the rally that he wanted, just right. in a different location.
And there's also was a revelation last night that a producer went into the audience before the event and said, "Please don't boo anything." And so they were allowed to cheer, they were allowed to hoot and holler, they were allowed to laugh when Trump defamed E. Jean Carroll again, which I hope she sues him again. But you know, so they were allowed to hoot and holler. They're allowed to, you know, laugh and applaud, but they were not allowed to boo. So this is, so it's, it was even though it was a selected audience to be right wing, they even like even further, you know, fixed the case, you know, but yeah, you're totally right. Why do you need an audience? I mean, is that just, you know, for event purposes to make it more dramatic? It doesn't help. I mean, it hurts.
It does. Let's switch over to Capitol Hill and wondering, George Santos was charged. He's now, you know, charged with crimes. He could do some serious prison time necessarily. If I saw right, Kevin McCarthy says he's no longer supporting him for his reelection, but he's not doing anything to push him out of Congress now because he needs him. And it does, again, make me wonder, Mark, where's the bar?
Yeah, there is none. You know, McCarthy knows that he looks bad by keeping Santos in Congress, but he does need his vote, as you say. And you know, in a lot of ways, Santos is just the perfect Republican. I mean, for this era. I mean, how different is he from Trump? I mean, dude, he lies all the time, just like Trump does. But and just to be really clear, with a 2/3 vote, the House of Representatives could kick Santos out today. They could get rid of him. And based on, there's plenty of evidence. I mean, there's plenty of stuff that they know that he did. I mean, he just settled some, you know, check stealing, you know, episode from Brazil. I mean, it's like, there's just so much out there. He's admitted that he lied about, you know, working for Goldman Sachs and his educational background. He's admitted that. That's like a fraud on the voters. So there's totally plenty of reasons right now why, you know, the House could just not, you know, just kick him out now. But McCarthy won't do it because, you know, he's saying, well, we're going to let, if he's convicted, it's not even whether he's charged, it's that he's convicted, which is just the kind of the standard that he's making up because he still needs Santos.
Well, speaking of making up standards, you know, Mitch McConnell certainly created new standards for, you know, Supreme Court nominees. And yet in this debt ceiling hostage taking, basically, I'm not going to call it a debate or a showdown, is Mitch McConnell really still being considered the grown-up in the room in the Capitol?
Yeah, I heard that on MSNBC the other day, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is a guy who stole a Supreme Court seat from Merrick Garland. This is a guy who twice prevented Trump from being convicted after he was impeached. I mean, really, the one human being who stands between Trump being kicked and removed out, you know, convicted and removed from office after his first impeachment is Mitch McConnell. And McConnell opposed the second impeachment too. And if this, and the thing about that is, as we know, the second impeachment, Trump would have left office anyway, but in the process, he could have been banned from running again. So the reason that Trump is in the position he's in, the reason he was able to spew 70 minutes worth of lies on CNN is because Mitch McConnell let him. And because not because Trump wasn't guilty, he clearly was guilty, but because Mitch McConnell is Mitch McConnell. So if that's the grown up in the room, it's a bunch of scary grown ups.
Last thing on media critiques, and I will admit I have not followed the whole court case with Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos, but I do know that this is somebody who's been convicted, and yet I saw a lot of noise about the New York Times apparently did a rather glowing profile of her. What? And again, I don't expect you to have the answer, but I'm asking anyway, why?
Well, you know, why do you write a story like that and why do you publish it? Mm-hmm. I think you do it for clicks, and you do it for access, because, you know, it's this, because everyone's fascinated, because, you know, she was very good at being blonde and, you know, and wearing, you know, black turtleneck sweater, and also, you know, and talking about how she was going to, you know, change the world, and everyone bought it. And so she's a fascinating public figure. But the thing about it, when you do that, the way they did it, you know, which is totally to kind of to make turn her into a sympathetic figure, you know, to, oh, well, you know, here she is, she's volunteering for charities, she's doing this, she's raising her kid, and here she is. And the thing about it is, you know, after committing felonies, here she is, you know, comfortably at home. That's when they described her home and her lifestyle. I was thinking, throw her in jail. I mean, she committed felonies. We're not supposed to feel sorry for her, yet that's what happens. And that's a media failing. And you see it over and over again. And, you know, you're not seeing that about some guy who held up a 7-Eleven on the south side of Chicago.
No, and they typically can't make bail, and they just sit in jail until, you know, all their court cases are complete. Mark Jacob, thank you so much. Appreciate the chat, and have a great weekend.
Talk to you later.
When we come back, Dan Schumacher is going to join us. We will talk about sports for the weekend. We figured this, we've got to diagnose what's wrong with the Brewers, and so we've got to think outside the box. So Cubs fan Dan Schumacher is going to have all the answers for us coming up after this break. You're up north.
Earl Ingram, Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
I believe this is the point where Mr. Mathers is probably playing some Grateful Dead music that I can't hear any of, so I'm going to assume that you've... got the song that he requested there, Luke? Oh, hey, there we go. There. Thanks for sharing, buddy.
China Kid, Sunflower.
Like I said, shaking off the rust.
Shaking off the rust. That's, you know, it's nice to know Aaron still has a job to come back to on Monday. Dan Schumacher is here now. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Just
thanks. Thanks for helping us diagnose the dumpster fire that is the National League Central right now. How bad is the National League Central overall right now?
Bad. I think their pitching's all bad. I think top to bottom, I don't care if you're the Pirates or the Cardinals, it's all about pitching. What I've noticed with the Brewers, not only are they starting pitching giving things up, but their middle relief as well, so which is they're losing games that way. But, I mean, some of their losses, 8-1, 9-1 for the Brewers, that's not good. Those are beat downs,
yeah.
You know, so – but as I alluded to before, you look at the entire NL Central there, in the last 10 games, nobody is over 500.
Nobody. That's what made me think of it as a dumpster fire. The Pirates, the Pittsburgh Pirates are in first place right now. But even in their last 10 games, they're 1-9. The Brewers are 2-8. You know, the Cubs and the Reds 4-6, the Cardinals 3-7. And the Cardinals, again, talk about teams that, you know, you don't expect to be that bad at 13-25. Something's gone horribly wrong in St. Louis.
Yeah, that's not like them. They're usually competitive every single year. That's not being on the bottom is not what they're used to. But as I was telling you off air there, I was reading some inside baseball stuff, and the Cardinals are trying to make a trade to get some bats for them out of the Yankees organization. So, you know, they're not giving up on the season yet because it's still early. There's still another 120 games. You know,
and what about your Cubbies?
They're the lovable losers right now, but you know, they're only 1.5 games out, so they're not off that bad. They have a young squad. I thought it was interesting this past week they played the Cardinals, and Wilson Contreras, which was one of their main players for the last 5 years and star players, is with the Cardinals, and they gave him a standing ovation because he hit a home run against the Cubs. So it was an interesting week for all of baseball.
It was just a lot
of different stories and bylines with it.
No kidding. And I see the Twins are on top of the AL Central, although again, for much of like the first two-thirds of the season last year, the Twins and Brewers were on top of their respective divisions and then took a tumble. So I guess you wouldn't take anything out of this. Mr. Mathers, I don't know how much sports talking you do on Dueling Tangents weekdays from 2 to 3, but if you have any diagnosis for the Brewers, you're welcome to offer that at this point as well.
I mean, I shared mine earlier, and you didn't like it. I said that they need to score more runs and prevent the other team from scoring as many runs.
Yeah, shut your mic off again. Okay,
I think there's bigger news.
What's that?
You know, I don't know if the NFL schedule that's been leaked.
Oh, yeah.
It's official now. It's official.
Yeah.
So Bears and Packers are week one, aren't they?
Yeah, Jordan Love begins the era of love begins in Chicago.
Yes.
That should be fun.
I can't wait for that one because I've been suffering for 25 years with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks to play against and as a Bear fan.
And here comes number three.
Yeah. I if they do, I'm giving up. I mean, the Packers have a horseshoe up there. You know what? You know, to be able to get three Hall of Fame quarterbacks in a row.
Dan, I don't think it's a horseshoe. It's just important to point out for all the listeners out there, God is a Green Bay Packer fan.
Don't go throwing. Yeah, play religion on that. That's what every Chicagoan wants to hear right now.
We're supposed to talk politics and religion at the dinner table, man, okay?
Well, look, or we're talking anatomy with horseshoes someplace where they don't belong. Right. You know, whatever it takes. Well, and here's where the game is going to be fun. Very fun. For one side or the other, because if Jordan Love has like this dominating performance, then yeah, everybody's going to be all cocky, like here we go, you know. Right. But if he gets like destroyed, if he gets like a season-ending injury in week one or something, you know, Bears fans are going to be like, okay, the tide has turned. It's all us again.
I tell you, the team though in that division that I think, based on how they played near the last eight games of the season, the Detroit Lions.
Okay.
Those guys are playing very hard for their coach. He seems to be a player's coach as well, former NFL player. I think Detroit's asleep coming out in this year, in my opinion.
You know, but that has been said for so many years now. Like Detroit, Detroit's ready. Detroit's ready to come back. And that team has been cursed for so very long.
Yeah. They were fun to watch at the end of the year, though. They were competing their asses off.
You sure like to say that, just knowing that they knocked the Packers out of the playoffs in that last game of the season. That might be influencing your answer, just a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah, did they? Oh, I don't know. Yeah. For folks that didn't hear us talk about it a little earlier, again, the Packers start in Chicago. It's a Sunday afternoon, 3:25 game on September 10th. Then they go to Atlanta. The first home game is on September 24th at noon. Against New Orleans, then there's a Thursday night game at home against Detroit. So I'm sure people were booking their hotels.
Who do the Jets open up? Aren't they on Monday Night Football right away in the first week? The
Buffalo Bills.
Aaron Rodgers?
Yes, it's the Buffalo Bills versus the New York Jets on Monday Night Football on September 11th.
Well, there's two quarterbacks, Allen and Rodgers.
I was going to say Monday
Night Football. That's some good. That's good TV right there.
Yeah, and again, that could be that could be just really not great news for Aaron Rodgers if he's completely humbled, because Allen's one of the hot quarterbacks.
Oh, he is
right now, and you know, I don't want to say he's going to stick a fork in Rodgers, but he very much could. Here's the other thing, the important thing to know about the schedule. I know a lot of people wonder about this. They want to be able to make plans, not for a Packer game, but without a Packer game. The bye week this year is October 16th, or whatever that Sunday is. Quickly looking, 15th. October 15th is the bye. So if you've got a honey-do list or a little fall color tour that you want to take and you don't want to miss the game, there's your off week. You got to go for that one. So that's my public service for everybody. But then if you missed us talking about it earlier, they have the Christmas Eve, noon at Carolina, and then they play New Year's Eve night, and that's at Minnesota, a night game on New Year's Eve. That's going to be a good time downtown.
Oh, yeah, it would be. Yeah, I bet you the bars would be open. They're going to be open late that night anyways, but
oh yeah,
it gives you a chance to get out there and watch a game early.
Yep.
But for us people, you know, we're in bed at midnight on New Year's Eve by freaking 10 o'clock now.
Oh, and look at this. We opened the season at Chicago. The last game is the Bears at Lambeau, but it doesn't say the date, time, and network all to be determined because of the flex. So it'll be January 6th or 7th, but you can't make a plan for that yet. So we'll see. We'll follow it. Thank you, Dan. Have a great weekend. Thanks, everybody, for coming along with us. Luke, thanks for pinch hitting for Aaron. You were entirely adequate.
Appreciate it.
And I can't thank you enough for that. We will be talking to the League of Women Voters about the work they do when it's not election season, coming up on Monday morning. So enjoy the weekend. We'll see you back here Monday morning, 6 a.m.